Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Welcome to part two, the final part of the story of Ruth Rooney. I'm Rob Greaves. Ruth was born in 1948 and adopted out at an early age. Her early years were spent with her adoptive parents on a farm in the Western Districts of Victoria. As she grew into her teens, she embraced her religion with passion, even working as a volunteer in Papua New Guinea for a time. In this program, Ruth talks at some length about her husband, John, and how he passed away after being taken off dialysis. But while his assisted dying was right in her mind, it nonetheless was a very difficult period for her. But her religion and her friends provided the support she needed. Ruth talks openly about an incident where her knees gave away and she found herself stuck on the toilet from 9 a.m. right through to 6 p.m. before her son found her and called the ambulance. In Ruth's words, one of those ambulance people must have been a plumber in a previous life. Her story is a mixture of humour, tragedy, compassion, beliefs, and a life which Ruth says was rich and rewarding. Let's pick up now with Ruth talking about the support she received when John was in palliative care. Being a person who has religion really deeply ingrained in you, were you able to cope with that easily?
Yeah, I was able to. I had the support of so many friends.
Yes.
The church pastor, he had leukemia, and yet he gave his time for me every second day to take me into the Box Hill Hospital to see John, or to SDO Health, which was Advent Care then.
Mm-hmm.
He had all the time in the world for that, although he was sick most days, you know, at home.
Yes. Did you realise at the time when dialysis stopped that it was inevitable then that John was going to die?
I thought about it. I hoped it wouldn't happen the way I thought.
Mm.
But it did, and it took 9 days for him to pass away. But that was good because he was on morphine and, you know, my mum was on morphine at the last as well when she died. She was 94. It all worked out okay, but it was after that trying to cope. But I've had so much support. I say to Kath, you guys are my family, you know. The people at the church are my family. Because my kids don't seem to care.
It's that generational thing, the generations that came after ours, it does seem to be a rule of thumb. Like our generation and certainly all our parents' generations, ones before, families were very close units, weren't they? And that unity seems to have been largely lost these days.
Yeah.
You mentioned a whole lot of questions I want to go back on, but you mentioned Kath. For people listening, Kath runs a program called the Melba Program. It's a kind of support program, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a great time.
You do? I've been to some of the Christmas parties.
Yeah.
That's right. Recently, in fact, right now, the Victorian government putting through Parliament a bill for people the right to die under certain circumstances. Have you looked at that? Have you thought about that in terms of John? Where they will help people if their life quality of life is poor?
Yeah, well, fortunately, I was able to make that decision myself. And it was like as if it was all taken out of my hands in one sense. You didn't have to go through everything that I believe you'd have to go through now with this bill. Yeah. I think there's going to be strict limits applied to it.
Too strict, or for you not strict enough, or about right?
Probably it will be good, because I've got mixed feelings on it. You know, ethically, I don't know. I'm trying to get my head around it.
But for a person whose partner has gone through such a terrible time, and the dialysis obviously was a stress on both your lives and not pleasant for him to go through, it seemed like there was an element of relief about it when the dialysis stopped.
Yeah, yeah. But I knew that it wouldn't be long and he'd be gone.
That's right.
And I could go up to see him in the hospital or in the nursing home, and I realised, you know, soon I'm going to come up, because he was deteriorating a bit more with being on the morphine, and
yes,
he wasn't awake and conscious so much. So I knew it was going to happen fairly soon. I just didn't know how and all that. And they had him on oxygen, and somebody came and said, why have we got him on oxygen when we're letting him go? It's palliative care.
It's a hard one, isn't it? It is a hard one.
But I was glad that he was on that for a bit.
Yes. There was a long time, though, between you and John getting married and John passing over.
Mm.
30 years, in fact, to the day, yeah, as you pointed out. That's a fair few years. A lot of things must have happened in that time. Did you keep working, for instance, once you got married, or did you stop working?
I worked for World Vision Insurance Company before that, Cooperative Insurance.
What did you do at World Vision? Sorry if I can come back to that.
Okay. I typed letters to sponsors who had children sponsored in other countries, Bangladesh and Haiti and all places like that. And we just had to answer questions. We had to sort of compose the letters ourselves.
Sure.
So I enjoyed that side of it.
What made you move on? Was it just time to move on?
I think I found it hard travelling and being married and all
yes,
of that.
Yes,
because we lived at Mulgrave in those days, and it was a long trip, and I was sleeping on the way home, and
okay,
I'd gone past my station.
Oh dear,
times and, yeah,
that's not pleasant.
No,
you wake up, you go, where am I? So then you went to insurance.
I went to insurance first in 1964, so I did that for 11 years, and I went from there to Papua New Guinea, actually.
Right.
Mm.
Then you came back, got married to John.
Yep.
Keep working.
Oh, I stopped in about 79, I think. It was just too much.
Yeah. I never asked you, what line of work was John in?
John was a fitter and turner, more like a turner.
Right.
Dad trained him. His dad was there for 34 years. John was there for 17 years at Ingersoll Rand.
Right.
It's an old name.
Yes.
They were at Frankston.
Yes.
He worked at South Melbourne when they were there. So trained by his dad, you didn't need certificates in those days.
No.
But he was one of 100 that was put off.
Oh, right. That was a period in the 70s?
Yep.
Yes. Yes, it was quite a downturn in the...
Yeah, the axe fell.
That's right.
Well, what happened was John sort of got a bit sick. He had a kind of a breakdown as well. He'd gone from night shift at Fountain Gate Shopping Centre, mostly cleaning on the night scrubber, and then he was doing bus driving in the daytime, and his body couldn't handle it.
Oh, goodness me. That was surprised.
So probably somewhere the renal failure was going against all that too.
When you stopped work, had you had your children at that stage, or were they to come a little later?
I had Paul in 1979 and James in 1983.
Yes.
But I used to work as a carer. So I was gone from the house from Sunday to Wednesday. And during that time, James had developed a pain in the appendix, and I wasn't at home to help. And he took 20 Panamax.
Oh, gosh.
And they had to give him charcoal suspension to drink.
Oh.
Two glasses of that put him off it for life. Can't have bird toast or anything.
I'm not surprised.
Wow. He went and had his appendix out.
Okay.
Yeah, and I wasn't there for it.
You weren't there for that.
No.
Was that distressing for you?
It was. It was really hard.
Hmm.
I was looking after a lady with MS, and she was bedridden, and I used to have to put her in a wheelchair with a hoist and take her up to the shower. I'd hoist her into the shower chair and push her up the passageway into the shower and leave her there for a while on the toilet, and then go back and get her and put her in the shower, and then I had to dress her after that. So I wrapped towels around her and pushed her back to the bedroom. And
goodness me.
Yeah.
That was real high-intensity care, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and she said to me, Ruth, your knee's not looking too good. I said, oh, it's fine.
famous last words.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And she realised there's something wrong with Ruth's knee because she saw the way I was bending and all that, and I was trying to save myself.
Oh, Ruth.
And my knee packed up in 2015, and then 2016, last year, I was in hospital for 6 months. And Kath and the whole group came in to the
of course
hospital.
They would. Of course they would.
They were humbling.
Did you have a knee replacement or something?
Oh, I had a knee replacement replaced 2011, 2012, and the other leg. Then 2015, 7 o'clock, I went to the toilet. 9 o'clock, I couldn't get up off the toilet. So in 2 hours, the knee had given up.
Oh dear.
I was weak and couldn't support my weight, and I was there from 9 o'clock in the morning until 6 p.m.
Oh,
and my son came home. And I said, Paul, I know you've never been in the toilet before with me, but
what?
Now's the time.
Yep.
So he had to try and get me up off
love
the toilet.
Love it, I lump it, yeah.
He couldn't do it properly, so he rang the ambulance. The ambulance person, in another life, he was a plumber. So he just said, Ruth, I'll just lean around you and I'll get the nuts out. And he did that. And
I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, it must have been very hard for you, but in retrospect, when you tell the story now, it's very funny,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's funny after.
Yeah, not at the time, though. No.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, featuring the life and times of older Australians.
You know, I was told I'd have to have my leg amputated.
Oh, okay.
Or fused. The doctor had said to me, think about it during the night and let me know in the morning which you decide for, you know, amputation or fusion. During the night, I'd had a heart attack.
You did?
Yeah. This was all going over, have my leg chopped off. And he'd explained to me it wasn't going to be below the knee.
Oh, gosh.
It was going to be above the knee because I had an infection in the knee. So
the stress.
I've still got my two legs, so it's good.
Wow, you do have your two legs.
I mightn't get around too well, but I do get around.
Well, somebody did a good job with you.
Yeah, great surgeons at Box Hill Hospital, the orthopaedic team. Wonderful. I've been on antibiotics ever since, and I was only supposed to be on them for 12 months. And
oh, goodness.
That was October when I had the surgery, so I'm still on them.
Now, when we started the interview, you mentioned that you had been adopted.
Yep.
Did you ever feel the need to try and find out more about your biological mum?
Yes and no, but my biological mother dealt in palmistry and fortune-telling and all that kind of thing.
How did you find that out?
Mum told me. Mum Myrtle.
You just felt that didn't
sit... She'd do strange things, and my brother told me what strange things she'd do. She'd come and make up stories. It would make people not like you that she told the stories to. So there were things that were totally untrue. So my life, you know, hopefully has been trying to help people not be like my mum that I started out with.
There's so many shows on television now about people that are adopted seeking out and finding their biological mums, and makes it sound like it's an absolute necessity and it always works.
Yeah.
But I've often felt that probably the mum that brought you up is the real mum. That sounds
that's
like the case
I
with you.
It. Yes, that's what I feel.
Life after John passed away, has that been easy for you or harder?
It's been hard. You know, missing him and feeling really hard. But as I said, the people outside of the house, they have been so wonderfully caring. I couldn't have done without them.
No.
Absolutely needed them.
Yes.
Margot, she's a great person.
So what?
Love
what
Margot.
You love Margot.
Yeah.
Well, Margot will be pleased to hear that because I bet she listens to this.
Huh.
What about your future? Do you see yourself having a future? I mean, when I say that, I mean, are there things that you would still like to achieve?
When I was in hospital, I went through a stage where I had the church pastor in there and I'd become sicker.
Mm.
and I couldn't breathe and all that. So I went into another part of the hospital in Anglis next door, and I was totally not well, and I couldn't go to the bathroom, and it all became a bed thing, not even pan. I was just totally not in control of anything. And I thought, this is going to be what it's like when I get out of here. I'm not even going to be able to go to the toilet.
Mm.
So I started to wonder about nursing home and all that. But no, that all came back to me, the sensations and feelings. And it's been a total learning curve for all of that. I do a lot of texting to people. And so I think my life now is built trying to encourage people. The other day there was a girl in one of the shops around here that she was feeling so down. So I wrote straight back. Nobody had contacted her before that, and I said, I'm here for you, just ring me if you need me. She was just totally depressed, something to do with her dad. I said, I'm here to talk, here to listen if you want me. So this is my life now. I think I don't do hobbies except for card making. Love all that sort of thing down at Melba.
Yes, again, once again, as you're talking about it, you've got this big smile on your face.
Yeah,
that tells me the things that you really get pleasure out of. Yes. It sounds like you're becoming aware that there are people outside that have needs, sometimes even greater than your own.
Yeah, you find that.
Yes, you do find that. And maybe that's a bit of a role for you, is reaching out to other people.
Yeah.
Do you think that people are generally now bit more disjointed, not so connected with their community and their families and things?
I do. They're like little islands all floating around. So I mean, like people, an island.
Given that you were brought up in, it had to be a tight family. There was nobody else around. They were just, you know, you were, but families in general were very close going back 40, 50 years ago. Why, do you have any thoughts as to why you think this has happened, that people have broken away from their communities and their families?
I don't know. I can't work that one out, because my daughter-in-law said, oh, we take care of our older people, but she didn't take care of me.
So that's an interesting observation, isn't it?
She walked past the door. Even my brother was here for 4 days without she'd said hello.
Oh, goodness.
And she doesn't text me or anything.
So that's very disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah, so I've lost touch with her mother and everything, because she used to let me talk to her mum on the phone when she rang her. I've lost touch with her mum and her family,
That's almost like adding to the isolation, isn't it? Young people, it's very easy to start sinking the boot into young people, but do you see anything positive happening in the world today with young people? Is there anything you can look at and go, well, at least that's happening, or that's right? Or is it all, for you, a bit more unravelling and...
I don't know. I don't know how to help them. I don't know what their problem is. Everybody's busy. I know they're trying to save for a house and all that kind of thing, and it's just too hard. But it's a mystery, because to me, you take care of people. And my husband took care of my mum and travelled from Mulgrave over to Hawthorne East on the freeway, the Monash freeway, make sure Mum was okay. When she was in the nursing home, he went to Bond Beach from Mulgrave to make sure she was okay.
Listen to older voices, revisiting through recollections.
And I went to Fiji.
Was that with John or since John passed on?
I went 2000 to Fiji with John, and then the next year I took my son, Paul.
To Fiji?
Yeah.
Do you like Fiji?
Yeah, it was good.
What was about it that you liked?
I went from Fiji to New Zealand, and I left my heart in Fiji. Just the relationships. We didn't go to a resort. We went to people's homes. You know, people that the person that we went with knew.
Was this through your church you made this connection?
No.
How did you find these people to actually go into their houses?
The guy that we went with, he knew these aunties and uncles.
Okay.
And lots of visits he's made over there.
So what is it about the Fijian people that you find so pleasant?
Actually, it wasn't the Fijians, it was the Indians.
The Indians in Fiji. Okay.
It's like the Aboriginals in Australia.
Yes.
You know?
Lovely place in general. Fiji, I've never
loved
been there.
It. Yeah, beautiful.
Right.
You know, the sea. We went to a beach and the water's clear and lovely surroundings and the palm trees and beautiful.
Hmm. Did you and John do any other travelling, or was it Fiji and New Zealand?
No, that was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
So, but you've been to Fiji, you've been to New Guinea, you've been to New Zealand.
Yep.
So, yeah, okay, it's a bit of travelling
there.
We just
went near Auckland to Mangere East, that was all.
Right. What about Australia? Did you manage to get to see any of Australia?
No, we were going to travel around Australia, but it never happened.
Never happened. John got sick. When you look back at your life, how would you describe it?
Oh, very meaningful and fulfilling and purposeful and all of those kind of adjectives, because even now I get on my scooter and I say, Lord, should I go out to the left? Should I go down to Rainers, to Stone Fruits, or should I go down to Woori Alec? And I expect to be sort of turning one way or the other. You know?
And what happens?
I suddenly think, I won't go to Rainers today. I'll go down to Woori Alec. I really need to get a few things. So
right.
I do that. People say, I wouldn't be on the road like you do. I say, well, it's either that or stay at home.
Because for people listening, and they're all over Australia, where you're located here in the little township of Woori Alec is quite a steep hill.
There's no footpaths.
It'd be close to a kilometre or more down there, isn't it?
Two kilometres.
Quite a trip on your scooter.
And down near the fire station, the road narrows down to just about the width of my scooter.
Oh, that's getting interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Down near Hillcrest Fire Station.
But that gives you a lot of freedom, doesn't it, the scooter?
Yeah.
It allows you to get round.
Yeah.
So you must be quite an identity around here. Everybody must know Ruth and the scooter.
Oh, there she is again. See the whitehead coming.
Oh, that... We're all suffering from that one. And if people listening haven't got white hair, it's coming, folks.
Yeah.
It's coming. That's right.
Can't escape that one.
No, you can't escape that one. If you had a group of young people sitting around us now and you wanted to draw upon your experiences, because you said it's been very purposeful, very directional, you've got a lot out of your life, what advice could you find to give them to try and have a life, may have a bit of purpose? What would you say to them?
It's very hard because you can't put your kind of life on other people. They have to know what you're talking about, feel it, and sort of pick it up and run with it sort of thing. I never enjoyed going to movies that much. Didn't go to dances like a lot of kids do. There wasn't the drugs around then. I would certainly say to young people, don't even have one. Try drugs or anything. I don't even drink alcohol. I don't enjoy it, so I don't have it.
No, if you don't enjoy something, why would you do it?
No.
And I assume you've never smoked?
No. The doctors always ask that one, do you smoke, do you drink? So I've never had a cigarette near my lips.
What about the world at large? That seems to be pretty chaotic these days. Do you have any fears for future generations of kids when you look at the world around you?
It's very hard. I would hate to think of bringing up a child in this sort of climate that we've got with all the difficulties.
But life does go on, doesn't it?
It does.
One way, but for better or worse, it goes on.
Yeah.
What would you like to see change then? If you could make changes out there, what would you try and change to make it a better world? If somebody was to say, Ruth, you've got the power.
I would just say to them, trust in God, put your trust in Him, and He'll direct all your paths. That's the way I've been brought up, so that's the best way that I know how.
We've been talking for about an hour now. We've covered quite a bit of ground, quite a few things. Well, that probably brings our chat to an end, Ruth. Could I just say what a pleasure it's been sitting down and talking with you and getting the perspective of a baby boomer who didn't follow the trail of most baby boomers, but her own trail. Been a very enjoyable story, and thank you for sharing it with all of us on Listen to Older Voices.
That's okay. Thanks, Rob.
but thou art strong. Jesus, keep me from all wrong. I'll be satisfied as long as I walk, let me walk close to thee. Just a closer walk, a closer walk with thee. Is my just plea,
just a closer walk,
daily walking close to thee. Let it be,
just a closer walk,
dear Lord, let it be. When my feeble life is o'er, for me will be no more. Guide me gently, safely o'er to thy kingdom shore, to thy shore.
Just a closer walk, just
a closer.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.